Tonight, lawmakers on the January 6th committee will gather at the Capitol for one more primetime hearing, the last scheduled hearing of the summer investigating last year's attack on the U.S. Capitol. Tonight, the central question will be, what was the president doing for 3 hours as his supporters were breaking into the Capitol to prevent the certification of the 2020 election? Congresswoman Elaine Luria, a Democrat from Virginia, serves on the committee, and she will be presenting tonight. Congresswoman, welcome back.
Thank you, Peter, for having me.
So after 7 high-profile hearings, tonight's has been described as something of a closing argument. So in a nutshell, what is your closing argument?
Well, described that way because, you know, it's sort of the final episode in what happened on January 6th. We did, you know, a whole series of hearings that led up to this point, talking about the pressure campaigns, the attempt to corrupt the Department of Justice, the call to Washington violent extremists. And then tonight we're going to talk about what happened on that day of January 6th during that 3-hour, roughly 187-minute period from the time the president finished his speech at the Ellipse. And mind you, this was a speech to a group of people who he knew were armed. He called them to Washington, D.C. For this rally. He stepped off that stage after having urged them multiple times to march to the Capitol and gave them the impression that he was going to march with them, in fact, like lead them to the Capitol. And from that moment until 4:17 in the afternoon, when he finally made remarks to the nation, essentially, you know, what one would anticipate a president to do would be very forceful, to call for, you know, a cease to the violence and, you know, hold people accountable who'd broken the law. But he didn't do any of that.
He didn't, and he could have at any point, though. He could have at any point. So what information do you have that would explain why he did not?
Well, we have testimony, both live witnesses who are going to join us, as well as testimony from many of the people who've spoken to the committee about the events that went on in the White House that day, the actions that people around him took to try to encourage him to say the right thing, to do the right thing. And in many cases, did exactly the opposite. People might recall there was a tweet, it was at 2:24 p.m., where he kind of threw gasoline on the fire. He told, you know, everyone through this tweet that, you know, Vice President Pence doesn't have the courage to do the right thing, essentially implying that he could unilaterally overturn the results of the election. And, you know, Vice President Pence, before that, he was already at the Capitol. He put out a letter stating that he was going to follow the law, follow the Constitution, and his duty was just to read the results. And the, you know, rioters, they reacted to this tweet. You can clearly see that they were hearing what the president said. They were then turning their anger to Vice President Pence.
I want to ask you about something related to this. Your committee has been trying to get Secret Service text messages from around the time of January 6th. They have disappeared. The agency says they were lost during a system upgrade that started before they were asked to keep the data. I think at this point you might have gotten a single exchange turned over. Do you think this was an honest mistake, or do you think the Secret Service could be trying to cover something up?
I think it's very concerning. You know, there's a requirement for federal agencies to retain different types of data and records, and it's something the committee is going to continue to dig into. I'm not an IT expert, so, you know, a lot of people will say, well, can't they recover those text messages? I don't know the answer, you know, the technical answer to, you know, how that kind of process would work, but we are going to put the smartest people on that, and we're going to really work to get this evidence because, you know, it's important that we understand everything that was going on during that time period.
So you haven't given up on your effort to see them? I mean, I just wonder if it's even possible based on the technology.
I think that there's a lot of things that we don't know at this point, so we're continuing to pursue this, and it's something that we will continue to dig into more because we need answers about, you know, what happened with these text messages. You know, we want to have access to anything that would paint a clear picture of what was happening on January 6th.
Another big question, of course, is whether or not Donald Trump will be charged with a crime. During a press conference yesterday, Attorney General Merrick Garland said this.
No person is above the law in this country. I can't say it any more clearly than that. There is nothing in the principles of prosecution, in any other factors, which prevent us from investigating anyone. Anyone was criminally responsible for an attempt to undo a Democratic election.
Congresswoman, I've asked you this before, but has your position changed on the issue of whether or not the former president should be prosecuted?
Well, I agree wholeheartedly that no one is above the law, whether that's a sitting president, a former president, or someone who is potentially going to become a presidential candidate in the future. I think that, you know, through the evidence we've laid out in the committee, and there was a ruling related to some of that evidence we were collecting, and Mr. Eastman, who was part of the plot to, you know, create these false electors, to acquire his emails. There's a federal judge who's already said that there's three specific items, which include obstructing government proceedings, defrauding the U.S. government, as well as common fraud, that, you know, it was likely enough for a federal judge to say, hey, you can't have attorney-client privilege to protect these emails because it appears that a crime has occurred here. I think there's other things that could potentially, you know, be criminal within what we've, you know, discovered and laid out. But I just want to reiterate, probably as I did last time, that, you know, the committee is a legislative committee. Our goal and our purpose as members of Congress is to lay out the facts, provide recommendations to prevent something like this from happening in the future. And, you know, it really would be up to the Department of Justice, a judge and jury, essentially, to determine if there was a crime.
I have less than a minute here, but I do want to ask you a personal question. There's an election coming up. You're from a pretty conservative district for a Democrat. Do you think your work on this committee has damaged your chances of getting reelected?
You know, it's something that, you know, we'll see in November, certainly as a Democrat in a district that's Republican going into this. You know, I had the thought, like, maybe this won't be popular with people in our district, but it was one of those things where I also thought to myself, you know, frankly, I don't care, because this is so much bigger than whether Elaine Luria gets reelected. I know that I'm doing the right thing. I'm on the right side of history with this, and this is just so important that we get the facts out to the American people.
Congresswoman Elaine Luria is a Democrat from Virginia. Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.